This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with an iconic actor from a 1970s television sitcom, or a heads-up about a birthday bash for a legendary New Orleans musician. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Some of the most creative celebrity comic artists and writers on the planet are heading to New Orleans as the 8th Wizard World Comic Con opens at the Morial Convention Center. It's a three-day pop culture extravaganza that attracts throngs of fans. Famed actor, comedian, and author Henry Winkler, known for his role as the Fonz in the 1970s sitcom Happy Days, will be in town. We caught up with him by phone. Henry, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how happy I am that I'm coming down there and talking to you, Diane.
I can hardly believe the Fonz is calling me.
It's true.
What have you been up to lately?
About 5, 6 and a half. You know what? My life is chock full. It truly is. I am so blessed. Better Late Than Never, our travel show with Bill Shatner and Terry Bradshaw and George Foreman and Jeff Dye premiered Monday. It was very successful. And that was amazing. We went to Germany. We went to Spain. And we went to Sweden and Lithuania and Morocco. And just had hilarious times.
Tell us more about the adventure and what makes it such a magical journey for you guys.
Well, the one thing that makes us magical is that we literally were amazingly connected. We had an incredibly good time together. 5 cameras, no script, all those cities. And we never knew what we were going to do. And then we had these adventures.
It must be fun to just be yourself.
You know what? It's difficult to be yourself because you cannot in any way edit. You just have to go. You have to listen to what the other guys are saying. You have to experience all these adventures together. And it is a gift that fell out of the heaven. I did a new show called Barry with Bill Hader. He directed, wrote, created, produced, and starred in it. And that will be for HBO starting in late February, March. And I'm coming down to New Orleans to the Comic-Con.
Now, will this be a debut with Comic-Con in New Orleans for you?
No, I was there once before, but I have been to New Orleans so many times. And I love it each and every time. And I got a taste of New Orleans days ago because I was on the Harry Connick Jr. show.
Oh, my.
And you cannot miss the New Orleans that surrounds him.
Your career has simply been incredible. Take us back to the early years and tell us about your landing the role of Arthur Fonzarelli, the cool biker, on the TV sitcom Happy Days.
You know, I went for an audition like everybody else. The only thing is, everybody in the room when I walked in, all the other actors waiting, had all been on television. And I had just come to California 2 weeks before I walked into that room. I got the job. I got the character. He only had 6 lines. I was only going to be in, I think, 7 of the episodes. And then they just kept writing for the Fonz and writing for the Fonz. And Happy Days literally introduced me to the world and led to me being King of Bacchus in 1977.
Yeah.
Now, I still have my doubloons.
You were supposed to be a sidekick to Ron Howard's character, Richie Cunningham, in this idealized look at family life in the 50s, but you stole the show. How did that happen?
Do you know what? I was lucky enough that they wrote a wonderful character. And I was lucky enough that I am a character actor, not a leading man. And so I was able to create a guy who I always wanted to be, but wasn't. He was in control. I never was. He was cool. I never was. He got the girls. I didn't. You know, and I had this most wonderful 10 years playing the Fonz.
Did you have any idea back then that you were creating such an iconic character?
No, no. Remember, I only had 6 lines to begin with. That was in the pilot. And I didn't have much more for quite a few episodes. And it was only as time went on that people wrote in and said, oh, we love this character, then they started to write more material for me. But I had no idea. He changed my life. He put a roof over my head. He helped send my children to college. I'm very grateful.
A lot has changed since the 70s, and your career has blossomed in so many ways. You are an author of children's books. How did that come about?
You know what? There was a lull in my acting career. Somebody said, hey, write children's books for about your learning challenges. I met Lynn Oliver, who knew all about children's literature, and we wrote 34 novels together. And some of those books I will have with me at my table when I come to the Comic-Con. They're for second graders up to fifth and sixth graders.
Now, comedy has changed over the years. How have you kept your comedic edge, and how has it changed for you?
You know, I'll tell you something. I don't know if I agree with that, because certainly language has changed. Points of view have changed, you know, but at the very base of it, comedy is comedy is comedy, and people want to laugh. I go back to Better Late Than Never, the travel show that we just premiered. People write, and it's consistent. My daughter and I, my husband and I, my wife and I, my family and I, have not laughed that hard. And all we are doing, Terry Bradshaw, Bill Shatner, George Foreman, heavyweight champion of the world twice, and me and Jeff Dye, a wonderful stand-up comic, all we're doing is reacting to these events that take place in all these different countries.
Give us an example of one of your adventures.
I push the envelope of my life. I mean, I'm talking, I pushed myself to the limit in Spain. We were having an art class. Everybody got a pound and a half of clay. We were going to make a sculpture. They didn't have a model, and they asked me, and I was the model. And I was a little chilly because I didn't seem, I was not able to wear anything except for my birthday suit.
Oh, my.
And I'm telling you that, you know, you forget after a while, you completely forget that you have no clothes on. And I went up to Terry Bradshaw and I leaned against him just to look at his sculpture. And all I heard was, back up. And then I went, oh, I completely forgot. I'm so sorry, Terry. Oh, it was really a funny moment.
You are having a wonderful time. It's so obvious.
Yeah, it truly is. And, you know, we're friends in real life now. These are people I did not know. I didn't know before we left America. I never met them before, except for Bill Shatner, I had known for an hour and a half. George Foreman, I met 20 minutes. Jeff Dye, I met him in my house for an hour before we left the country.
What was it that made you guys click?
That is something that is indescribable. There are no words for that. Either you do or you don't. Either you've got chemistry with another human being or you don't. That's God-given. You can't make that up, especially not with all those hours, with all those days, with all those countries.
So what can we expect from you at Comic-Con?
You know what I like to do? I stand on the other side of the table so that when someone comes up, I'm right there with them. Because I get the gift of warmth. I get the gift of people telling me how much they enjoy what I do with my life. I sign a picture. I'll sign one of my novels. And we look each other in the eye. And I do the coin trick that I did in Click with Adam Sandler for the children who come to the table. And that makes me so happy, I can't even begin to tell you. I can't tell you about it because a magician never gives away the secret.
Uh-huh.
It's the only trick I can do in my life.
We'll just have to come out to Comic-Con and see for ourselves.
I hope so.
Are you expecting to see fans dressed as the Fonz at Comic-Con?
No, you know what? Some people do. But mostly they come, they dress up as their favorite characters in anime, or they come just as they are, and we hug, and it's wonderful.
Can you sign off for us with your famous Happy Days greeting?
I look forward to everybody coming to Comic-Con, coming to say hi, and whoa.
Actor Henry Winkler, this has been so much fun.
What a great interview. Thank you so much.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your flat back.
Comic-Con opens January 5th at the Montreal Convention Center and runs through January 7th. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Save the date, January 9th, the kickoff of the 4th annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival, the celebration honoring the late NEA jazz master, singer, songwriter, storyteller, and author, spans 6 days. Barker was a mentor to my guest, festival founder and acclaimed guitarist, Detroit Brooks, and Fred Johnson, a member of the Black Men of Labor, a civic organization that promotes brass bands in the city. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
This young festival continues to gain traction, expanding this year to 6 days of events. Detroit, as founder, what are your thoughts on the festival's success?
I'm grateful, and it shows that people do appreciate the music. A lot of people are still learning about Mr. Barker. That makes me happy. He's a big part of the success of the music in this city.
Now, each of you were mentored by Danny Barker. Can you tell me how your paths crossed and how Danny's teaching affects your careers today?
Well, mine is rather lengthy, but I can say that if you were around the New Orleans traditional brass band music, you could not have been around the music and not have been introduced to Danny Barker. He understood the importance of it, and he walked it, talked it, preached it in every aspect, and that is what created the Fairview Baptist Church Brass Band, because he saw by attrition that the older musicians would die off, and he thought that the younger musicians could learn a lot from the older musicians. Of course, there was great study in the book, but there was a lot of study in these men's heads and in their behavior they would not otherwise get. It worked because he and Reverend Darby and Lucian Barbaran kept going forward. And out of that band is what created a lot of your quality, top-notch musicians who represent New Orleans and the traditional music in the world today.
And Detroit?
My introduction to Mr. Barker was through a previous marriage. My brother-in-law, Edward Johnson, was a trombonist that played Preservation Hall and traveled the world. He introduced me to Mr. Barker at a party. Mr. Barker was friends with my uncle-in-law, Ernie Cagnoletti, who was a trumpet player that also played at Preservation Hall. And he used to give parties at his house, and Mr. Barker was always there. And he would tell his stories, and sometimes he would come. If we were playing, he would just grab the guitar and play. You know, he never would bring an instrument, but he would just take my guitar, whoever guitar, you know, was there, he took it and played it. That's where I met Leroy Jones. We formed a band with my brother-in-law that was called Edward Magic Review. So we came up playing, and Danny influenced me by his playing, you know, his conversation, giving ideas on things to do, books to read, you know, people to look at, a musician, and things to absorb.
Danny was a banjo player and a guitar player. Where's the connection between his music and that of the brass band players?
His family was basically brass, you know, traditional, you know, the Barbarans. Danny is, a member of the Barbarans, and Danny's travel extended his musical venture into the guitar when he played with people such as Cab Calloway and on. You know, all of the people that Danny played with over the years were more guitar music. And when he played the traditional music, he made the transition to the banjo because it gave it a different feel. It cut through the horns, you know, whereas the guitar would not do that.
Fred, tell me, why is it important for you to play a role in keeping our city's music culture, specifically the brass band culture, alive?
The music is essential to the world. People come to New Orleans for multiple reasons. The music, the hospitableness, the food, and the proximity of things around here. But the tradition is what also allowed the African-American community to sustain itself and maintain itself. When times were extremely hard, the music was medicinal. And that music is the foundation of what made the Sweet Emmas and the Louis Armstrong and the Sidney Bechets and all of the great men and women who came before us. So it's imperative that we understand that and do all we can to keep that visible and in some ways sustain it.
What's the most important thing you learned from Danny Barker?
Don't go with the fad. Danny would always say that people like new. They will always throw all the old stuff out for new. But when you throw the old out, you're throwing out the foundation on which it was built. I tell the young musicians, it's all right to play whatever you want, but you want to keep the foundation. You want to know the music. And when you called on, you have the uniform and you know what music to play for that audience.
And that today is the mission of the Black Men of Labor?
Labor? Yes, ma'am. We do an annual parade, and October of 2018 will be 25 years. And in our parade was to make certain that we had a minimum of 12 to 15 piece brass band, men and women, that are dressed in the traditional black and white uniform and playing the traditional music.
What are some of your favorite Danny Barker songs?
All of them. Feel My Legs. Which one's not, you know? I'm a Cowboy. Nevertheless.
Save the Bones.
That was his hit, one of his hits, you know.
Yeah, Save the Bones for Henry Jones.
And you can Henry don't eat no meat?
Henry don't eat no meat.
You can continue.
The Fruit Man.
And he done his own rendition of songs. He took the song and he made it become a part of him. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just sung as originally written, you know.
St. James Infirmary.
Yes. It was just things about Danny that was unusual but good.
And on that note, this year's festival has been extended by 2 days. What's on tap, Detroit?
Well, we're starting off with the kickoff patron party that will be at the Ellis Marcellus Center. We will feature Sun Pie Barnes. We'll show film by Matt Martinez. We'll have Miss Gwen Tompkins there to speak about the book, The Life of Jazz. Then we will kick off a concert. We will have the kids from the Marcellus Center to come out and play a number or two. And Herlin Rollins, Dr. Michael White, Mitchell Player, and myself and Will Smith will perform and close out the concert. That's the opening night.
What follows?
Well, we have so much stuff going on. Fred Castron will interview Herlin Rollins, Fred Johnson, Scott Billiton, Greg Stafford, Ellis Marcellus, and Roger Dickerson. And they will talk about life with Danny Barker.
You've got an international guitarist coming in, Claude Carré. Tell us about him.
He will be coming in on January the 10th. That's the Wednesday night at the Prime Example from 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock. He will come in and present himself. I had the opportunity of meeting him about 2 years ago.
He's a Haitian artist?
Yes, he is. And he has an interest in the New Orleans music because of the connection between Haiti and New Orleans. He was with us last year, and he put on a phenomenal show. We decided to bring him back again this year. We'll have him here at the Prime Example with Steve Mazakowski, Carl LeBlanc, Chris Severin and Julian Garcia as the band behind us.
You also have a master kora performer from Senegal?
We will be doing that at the George Wing Center, Marikiba Kiyate. And this will be the first year that we have him. He's a great kora player. He lived in New Orleans for a while.
What would Danny think about this celebration, honoring his life, his legacy, and his birthday? I believe he would be 109 this year.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. I would think that at every step of the way in every event that's scheduled and planned, he would drag that banjo in there and start strumming.
He would be there. There's no doubt about it. But he is there in our spirit.
Yes, you know? He is.
This is a festival in honor of Danny Barker, and that's what we wanted to be. More or less, we're picking up the torch. We want the things that he instilled to continue.
Festival founder and guitarist, Detroit Brooks. And Fred Johnson, member of the Black Men of Labor. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Tonight I'm gonna give a supper. We'll eat some food that's rare. At the head of the table, I'm gonna place Brother Henry's chair. I'm gonna invite all the local big dogs. We're gonna laugh, we're gonna talk, we're gonna eat. Then I'm gonna rake up the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry doesn't eat no meat.
The Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival runs January 9th through 14th in venues around the city. It kicks off next Tuesday with a patron party and festival concert at the Ellis Marcellus Center for Music, 1901 Bartholomew Street, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. A schedule of events and ticket info can be found online at DannyBarkerFestival.com.
Sue Henry will have something nice and sweet to eat, something southern. Then I'm gonna scoop up the bone for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry doesn't eat no meat.
That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.